Clustered Conversations. Clustered Conversations. By Weka.
Hey there, and welcome back to Clustered Conversations. I'm Bob.
And I'm Josh.
And this week we're joined by Brian Mitchell, one of our newest SEs out there in Atlanta. Actually, you're not that new now. I mean, you're like, three, 4 months?
Yeah, right on.
You're now a veteran.
He's an old-timer now, yeah.
And so Brian's been working back east with a lot of pipelines in video entertainment with a lot of the guys out there. And when he's not doing VFX or working with Weka, he's out flying planes, looks like.
Thank you, Bob and Josh.
Wait, what kind of planes? Are we talking Gulfstream 5s here, or are we talking paragliders?
We're talking commercial aviation Airbus.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So my wife always says, hey, you know, if the first officer, the captain are incapacitated, I don't want to be on that plane. I said, oh, honey, you got to have faith in me. I can't be on the plane.
Come on. Well, you know, landing and actually landing are two different things. You can get down the ground. Yeah.
Well, landing you can walk away from is a good landing, right?
It was a great day. Exactly.
So Brian's came in with us with a bunch of background in media entertainment. I worked in media entertainment for a while since I worked down in Southern California for most of my career and covered a lot of the studios. But I worked mostly on the IT side, the business side of M&E, even though it was kind of cool. Some of the data centers are actually on the sound stages. It's crazy. But Brian's been working more with the VFX houses and the guys who do the cool stuff in the background that makes the movies pop these days. So, Brian, how'd you kind of come to be in M&E? Is it just a location or just a passion? Where did it come from?
Funny you ask. You know, really, M&E found me, right? Worked on a lot of the major motion pictures, some of the recent Super Bowl TV spots, definitely some of those triple A gaming projects, of course, broadcasters, immersive content. You know, it's been a long journey, but wow, you know, love it here. Everything from post, VFX, even playout.
Was it just just happened to be in the Atlanta area, or is it more just you just really love that kind of field and kind of gravitated towards it?
You know, it's a mixture of both. Atlanta's the second Hollywood of the East, they call it, right? You know, I've spent a lot of time former places running a lot of the major studios, you know, working on a lot of the content projects for various media asset managements, as well as even a lot of the VFX shops. And, you know, this is definitely something that I get really passionate about.
Right on.
So if I wanted to look up your IMDb link, could I see your credits there, bro?
I wish. Maybe one day. Maybe one day. You never know. Yes.
Well, you're now at Weka. I mean, you've been at other file system places before, and you're now at Weka. What attracted you to Weka, and, you know, especially with your M&E background, what attracted you here?
Sure. You know, I looked at Weka, and I said, wow, you know, it's the best of all worlds for media and entertainment, right? You know, auto-tuning workflows, right? I don't have to tune or retune for, say, playback scrubbing, color grading, transcoding, rendering, compositing, all those various workflows across the pipeline. Second, it's all around zero-copy pipeline. You know, we've all seen places where they will ingest, they'll edit, they'll transcode, they'll, push to distribution. And all those are unique silos. They don't talk well together. It's kind of like, a lot of the M&E apps, right? I once told someone, it's like kind of like duct tape and a lot of crazy glue code just to make these things talk well together. Whereas here at Weka, wow, you know, I can consolidate to a single content pool, right? Then finally, I really love our partnerships with the likes of Amazon Nimble Studio and Arch Studio on AWS. I can spin up those studios on demand. It's fully integrated. Just works.
Cool. So what did you think of our SMB stack for the most part? I mean, I know Josh and I have worked on this thing for about a year now. How's it working for you?
Performing very well. You know, we've got quite a few customers that are saying, look, I need to be able to start to transition some of my render jobs from, say, Flame with Unreal Engine 5 to our SMB stack, right? This is working out very well. We're talking, minimum, 3.5 gigs a client of throughput.
Nice.
In other cases, we're looking at a lot of those traditional post shops. Think about broadcasters, right? They want to be able to run Adobe Premiere, After Effects, et cetera. And what do they leverage? Well, they're Windows workstations with SMB. So, the stack is rock solid. It just works. It's got all the SMB features like multi-channel built in, ready to roll.
Cool. Josh and I were at the AWS show, and then the week after, some of the guys went to the Dell show. You got lucky and got to go to the NAB
show. Fun show. Can you give us
a quick rundown on how we were, seen there, or, anything cool you saw that we can help partner with, or any place where we're kind of featured?
Sure. Bob, Josh, NAB was absolutely amazing. After 3 years, we were able to catch up with old buddies, old friends, and make some new friends as well. I want to say attendance was something like 52,000 attendees this year. Remember in the past, it was well over 100K attendees. So it's definitely changed, but in a good way. We were meeting both with customers. In fact, speaking of customers, we actually had Untold Studios present their Frito-Lay Super Bowl ad and the making of that Super Bowl ad on Weka in the AWS theater in a booth. Really cool stuff, right?
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Any other kind of major projects that have been running on Weka that were talked about at NAB?
Oh, yeah, 100%. We were talking about another project with Praymaker. Praymaker is a studio, VFX studio, out here in New York City. They are starting to do a lot of film, episodic, and advertising content that, of course, works great on AWS. They're 100% AWS with tools such as Flame and ShotGrid, et cetera. Great times catching up with both of those customers, as well as a lot of other customers and partners.
Right on. So go ahead, Josh.
So, Brian, usually at NAB, there's an entirely unrelated conference that happens at roughly the same time. That happened again this year?
Mm-hmm. It did. It did. It exactly did. And, it was good to get to know a lot of those people. You got it.
Okay.
So I know we've done some work in the past with Autodesk. We've been kind of trying to get in more and more in touch with the application makers to ingratiate us into the M&E space. What have we been doing with Flame? I mean, I know that's something that I've heard about, I've seen about.
Sure. A lot. Number one is, let's talk about what the challenge is first with Flame and how customers have tried to solve this. In years past, we all know each workflow requires highly tuned I/O. So using Flame as an example, if I'm doing, say, color grading in Flame, right? Mm-hmm. Sure, I can visually look at that. But when I actually look at the I/O patterns of that, for example, that's mostly a read pattern. In other cases, maybe it's a read-write pattern. Right. Or mostly write pattern. So I can actually look at, each individual workflow is sequential versus random read write ratios. Mm-hmm. What do? We're auto tuning that. So why do customers like Praymaker and Untold run on Flame with Weka? Easy. Number one is they don't have to worry about tuning, retuning their rendering or compositing, lighting, et cetera, et cetera. But more specifically on Flame, during NAB, we launched our Flame on the Cloud with Weka in AWS. This is the big announcement where we said, look, if you want Flame on demand, we're ready. It used to take weeks and massive upfront costs to spin up these Flame workstations. Now, just spin it up with Arch Studios or directly in your VPC on demand.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and you can scale this stuff as well, right? You're not limited to expensive Flame hardware, like I mentioned. You can run instances of new project servers, burn nodes, all this stuff. Yeah, makes life simple, all through Teradici or nice DCV to a client back in Mac, Windows, in your favorite coffee shop.
Perfect. Now, I remember, what was it? Not too long ago, there may have been a bit of a ludicrous display of of Sporting around about November-ish, I believe. And one of those commercials, I remember being, it was, you know, completely 3D rendered, but it looked photorealistic. It was amazing. Can you go into a little bit about that frog commercial?
Oh, yes. The frog commercial. Yes. You know, it's funny. We talked about that. We talked about, quite a few of those. You know, when you start talking about the entire VFX pipeline, wow, you know, there's a lot of times where people say, oh, wow, you know, it's just easy, right? You just do the CG work, you know, you
just do the thing.
Render a few frames, you know, texture it, you're done, right? No, it's not that simple. Literally, for example, our friends at Untold, they were able to look at rough orders of like 11, 12 years of full-time work and compress that down to weeks. No joke, weeks. How do they do that? Well, a few things. One is they're sitting there saying, oh, you know, a good example of this. There was a, in that commercial, they had a park ranger or someone. The director says, oh, you know, we need to change this from a male to female character. What happened? They had to go back on site, in a universal backlog, and reshoot that stuff with the fake trees, fake shrubbery, et cetera. And literally it was, all right, now we're going to rebuild the mesh. We're going to rebuild all the frames. And it came together, very short order. But the challenge here is, if the director says, oh, you know, that doesn't look right, we'll clean it up in post, people just throw up their hands and say, oh, you know, leave it to post, right? and here's what doesn't change. The deadline, right? The deadline stays the same. So they were challenged with, look, we got to deliver this on time, on budget, which they did. And they were able to get that, push that out. And wow, you know, the commercials, the advertising looks amazing.
Absolutely. That's one thing I kind of would like to dive into a little bit is the kind of how the workloads are, you know, a little bit different, obviously, with M&E. You know, data is data, you know, reads and writes are reads and writes, data's coming in, data's coming out. But the kind of more specific and unique challenges to M&E, I guess, you know, specifically around deadlines. But also around kind of a rather diverse and disparate kind of set of users and, you know, folks that have very strong opinions about the tools that they use and it must live on X platform and I must use, you know, Y application. Like, can you go into a little bit about that, kind of those challenges that are there and kind of unique to the space?
Oh, yeah, 100%, Josh Sheffield. You know, M&E, media and entertainment, is a very broad category. You have production, so pre-prod, production, post-prod. You've got distribution. Think about, OTT, your streaming, over-the-top streaming services, video on demand, as well as standard linear broadcasts, like you watch on your typical TV or satellite. You know, in other cases, you have the back end, we call it, the marketing, the ad analytics, even monetization platforms. So rights management. So you've got a lot of broad categories here. Most of what we focus on will be those two first areas, the collaboration, right? The post-production, including visual effects, as well as the playout, right? So in those two areas, there's a lot of challenges. I could spend all day talking about this, right? everything from, what if I need to ingest some dailies from shots on site, And now I need to say, all right, I need to start working on these, right? I need to build out my workflows. I need to understand that, look, when I build out these things, I cannot have any dropped frames, period, right? Good news here. We can start to do playback scrubbing at some insane amount, like 500x playback scrubbing, zero drop frames. That's even on raw footage, right? Think about totally uncompressed raw footage, not like your typical iPhone where you have or Android device, you know, where it compresses everything. No way. In other cases,
like 4K uncompressed HDR frames, right?
Yeah, like, funny you mentioned that. You know, in terms of UHD content, we're not just seeing 4K, 6K. We're now working towards 8K, in some cases 16K formats with 16K. Not just like, you know, 29, 30 frames a second, which is typical for TV or films, but no, 60, 120, 240 frames a second. That's, you know, high frame rate stuff as well.
That's extremely high frame rate. I mean,
yeah,
like TVs. I know there are some TVs now you can get a 4K TV that supports like NVIDIA G-Sync that'll do 120 or maybe 144
frame
a second sort of thing. But that, like, that's usually meant for, you know, you're sitting there playing your PlayStation 5 Pro, or you got your gaming PC rigged up to it, and you're trying to get super high frame rate, and you're hoping that you can afford or find a GPU that'll actually push those frames. Like 16K media content, like what kind of time to market? What kind of time to, like, that actually being consumable at the home? Is that even on the horizon?
That's way off the horizon at this point. I believe there's been some prototypes at CES for 8K, and you know, there's 16K televisions. But when we start looking at this, it's much more about those immersive content experiences. It's a much more like those theme park attractions, for example. You know, and then we get into even gaming platforms. We typically, you know, have now just touched the surface of Unreal Engine 5 just released. So these are the sort of things that are still a few years away, but we're quickly rolling into these ultra high def, high frame rate workflows, 100%.
So maybe like 10 years from now or so, when the next crop of, you know, remastered whatever, you know, Blu-ray, quote unquote Blu-ray for today, but, you know, remastered in the future, it only came out on that paltry 4K originally, but now we've just digitally remastered it into 16K, and realistically it's just being released at what it was filmed at.
Get a new TV.
More TV sales, exactly. Yeah, so. You know, it's funny. We joke about this, but we're literally starting to see OTT, over the top, and even streaming platforms running with 100% 4K channels. No joke, right? Yeah, you can run on your typical YouTube or your other streaming services, but this is literally content from your cable or satellite provider running in 4K. And it comes down to bandwidth, bit rates. You get the point, right? Yeah. How much can you squeeze in a pipe?
I'm personally more, I believe more in the streaming services doing that, because I know the cable operators, even though they said they had HD in the beginning, they were compressing the heck out of it. And then they've done the same thing to 4K. It's 4K, but it's not, you know, it's compressed the heck out of it. So you get a lot of artifacts in it. Whereas the streaming services do a little better job of, if you do have the bandwidth, they do actually render up all the way.
You know, that's a great point, because when I'm looking for the cleanest signal, I'm definitely looking at streaming services, number one. But number two is, you know, Josh, you mentioned earlier some of the workflows. This perfect segue to talk about distribution, right? Delivery, playout, for example. One of the challenges is, when I look at these head units, these are playout head units that actually will take this stuff to satellite, cable, et cetera. Wow, these things, they only have 30 seconds, a minute of cache, right? You know, think about your standard like SD card, micro SD card. Well, what happens on the back end is it's being fed from a pool of file system, a content pool, storage pool. And so that caching, has to be available 24/7, right? You cannot have dead air or dropped frames when you go to play out. Good news is, you know, Weka is all about that. We've built in all the hooks, all the integration there. Definitely.
Sweet. Awesome. So, I mean, Josh and I have been working on a few others. So we've got customers now, I guess, doing the entire pipeline. We've got the Autodesk Flame that's going on as well. Autoshop. Back in 10th grade. And then we've got...
You're trying to V8 swap the Pinto again? Come on.
We've got customers doing, inline, putting the information on the screen as the video is going through it with Weka, as well as now I've got customers doing color correction and editing on Weka. It's crazy to see how far we've come in such a short period of time.
Oh, it really is. You know, it was funny. You know, we were talking with a few of our customers back at NAB, and they were talking about, hey, you know, some of the things that we're building where we can literally render, for example, a character's hair flowing in the wind, or when we start to work off of rigging these models. In other words, before we can animate stuff, mm-hmm. we have to build a digital skeleton for animators to use. It's called rigging, and this rigging means involving bones, calculating and implementing skin weight, muscles, mm-hmm. replicating that natural movement. Mm-hmm. We have come so far, gang, from the old days. Literally, the old days, someone would try to position a camera angle and, you know, add a smoke for a train passing by or something like that. We've come so far. Even some of the early animations, think about 1980s, 1990s animation versus now. Wow. You can literally run, say, a RenderMan or excuse me, Maya with RenderMan and start to have a crowd scene where each individual CG, each individual person will look different, will have different movements. We've all seen this.
I'm still paying for my psychological bills from the first Final Fantasy movie. That one really messed with me. But and then I worked with a back in, God, this is early 2000s. They were we were talking about how they were rendering the orcs, and they were doing it using a random number generator for the length of the shin and the length of the femur. So each one had a different gait. So that was always very fascinating. And then yesterday online, I saw a demonstration of the latest Unreal Engine that is running with a Japanese train station, and the realism and the motion was so amazing that I was completely blown away. It looked like it was picture perfect.
Oh, 100%. I'll never forget. I was looking at some the other day, the movie, The Titanic, right? Mm-hmm. One of the most famous movies out there. And it's nothing but green screens, but what they're literally doing is saying, all right, let's put this real life character into a live action scene and then overlay things like explosions or maybe a water underneath the ship.
And that movie unfairly maligned an iceberg. That iceberg was just sitting there doing nothing. It was all the ship's fault.
Oh, I know. You know, those silly icebergs, exactly. What's funny is a lot of these, elements in when we talk about compositing in part of the VFX pipeline, this is exactly how we've evolved these techniques, where whether it's color correction, masking, any of these things, it creates that illusion that all the elements naturally belong together. As I always say, gang, the best visual effects is the stuff you don't see.
That's true. I've been watching some of the fantasy stuff that they do within the Atlanta studios for the Marvel movies and the TV shows, mm-hmm. even the Star Wars stuff. Yep. It's amazing that it's the green screen. I mean, it used to be blue screen back when Superman was done, right? Then went to green screen during the Star Wars days. And now it's literally a high resolution digital screen that moves with your eyes. It is the craziest thing I've ever seen. It's no longer like they're living on a projected set. It's unreal.
Oh, I know. those things. There's a lot of talk about what we're running into next phase of rendering and VFX, mm-hmm. real time rendering, right?
Yeah.
So now I can work on stuff in real time without setting up these expensive, you know, hundreds of thousands of cores with hundreds of petabytes of backend and doing these massive renders, right? That are more, on the back end, right? After we set up all the frames, all the polygons, all the mesh. And this is starting to really change post and move this stuff to the next level. Like you said, LED screens and real-time rendering. Oh, yeah.
Isn't that how the Mandalorian was filmed?
Yep. You got it.
Next same thing. LED background. Which I think actually saved them a lot with and having to do some post work in terms of lighting, because mm-hmm. You have that LED screen behind you that's obviously projecting some light on your back or in front of you or however you are, and that's saving you a lot of post time and having to figure out that ray tracing and exactly where that lighting should be coming from. Like the lighting's there, the whatever neon that you just walked past that's reflecting off your helmet, you don't have to try and figure that out or guess that in post and a bunch of different iterations. It's just there and done.
It's kind of funny. The Commodore 64 kind of set the stage for what we're doing now. Since you were talking about polygons, it was mm-hmm. instead of using pixels, they were using shapes to put together shapes to create images on that platform. So I think little pieces of previous computing have kind of grown into these amazing features that people thought were forgotten for a long time ago.
Oh, 100%. There's a great there's a lot of great customers that have said to us, wow, Brian, my GPUs for my VFX pipeline, they're always thirsty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, it's true. You've got, millions and millions of polygons per frame, right? And thousands of frames. We talk about a lot of these shots that we're running with VFX these days. And I'm even in awe of what's been going on in the industry. Back a few years ago, we would say, we'll take a few shots. We'll run with it. It's good, right? Now we're seeing major motion pictures with, thousands upon tens of thousands of shots per film. I mean, it's off the charts crazy.
I kind of miss the old days of models though. Those were
some. Oh yeah,
a bunch of stop motion.
Yeah. Stop motion, love it.
Yeah, so cool. What's next? What do you think we're doing next? What's the next kind of big thing that we can go after, or what should customers talk to us about?
Sure. So a few things. Number one, next big thing is how do we now look at a lot of the post workflows with your raw codecs, right? So like I was mentioning earlier, we're seeing that people will say, hey, I want to do a lot more than just work off of my proxy workflows. I want to go full res mezzanine workflows, right? And I want to be able to handle 8K content, UHD content at hundreds of frames, 120 frames a second. That's what we're now working into right now with a lot of customers, a lot of ISVs, right? That's a big thing. And this goes back to the consolidation of a lot of the broadcasters, a lot of the shops. We're starting to really look at, just like on the back end, what can we do to consolidate a lot of these silos, right? So that we don't have to highly tune them. They auto-tune so that we can stop making copies of projects and sequences, frames. We do all this, we're seeing this day in, day out, right? That's definitely a super big challenge that the industry as a whole is starting to consolidate on is, all right, you know, more UHD content, more real-time rendering.
I got one more question for you. We get this this amazing tiering capability with Weka, right? The ability to move data not from from the flash tier all the way down to an object tier and be able to recall it in seconds, right? Like gigabytes a second. How does that benefit, you know, the media entertainment? Is that something we can utilize there? I know the zero copy we talked about, right? Mm-hmm. Not having to move your data to do work. We can do high performance and high IOPS. But now I'm thinking about tiering. Can we do, is cheap and deep also important in this world?
You know, a few things. I see this as a single namespace conversation. A lot of people say, "Oh, I'll just place it on Glacier, Amazon Glacier, you know, deep archive tape, etc." That's great, but I remember we talked to one person that said, "Look, I've got an entire floor of tape dating back to the LTO2 days, no joke." <right?" laughs> And they said, "We need to keep this stuff indefinitely." You know, we talk retention periods. Well, they're truly indefinite, because what happens if they need a certain sequence, image, certain piece of content from 10 plus years ago? They need to recall that very, very quickly. So something like instant retrieval within S3, perfect use case here.
Right.
You know, speaking of instant retrieval. Josh, Bob, we actually had one customer that said, we leverage that single namespace flash object, but we had some challenges with the Flame, right? They were running the Frame store, and they said, "Look, I need to quickly restore." The guy says, "Okay, go walk the dog. I'll be right back." Right. And before the guy could get out the door, he's like a VFX supervisor. Our guy says, "Hey, hold on. Don't walk the dog. Come back. I think I got something for you." No joke. We were able to restore that from our S3 object buckets in seconds. And, nothing lost. No sequences, no projects, nothing. And the guy was able to walk his dog, and all worked out well. But bottom line is, you know, whether it's fast retrieval, whether it's retrieval from instant retrieval from an object bucket, that single namespace makes a world of difference.
Cool. So now we can say we are truly a data platform for M&E.
Yep, 100%. You know, we are the new M&E platform. We, like I said, we're doing a lot with a lot of post VFX playout customers. Super excited and looking forward to NAB New York coming up, IBC, of course, lots of other shows like SIGGRAPH in the not too distant future.
Cool. Awesome. Well, Brian, thank you. I know you're busy out there. Thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. And
Much appreciated.
Cool. Absolutely. And we'll hopefully see more and more of Weka in the titles of movies, or at least in the end titles, and then maybe get us an IMD credit for the company as well. So
there you go.
I love it. 100%. With that, I'm Bob.
And I'm Josh.
And this has been a Clustered Conversation. See you guys.
Thank you.